This is the Sheep Guarding Llama Podcast for Friday, January 20th, 2006. I am your host, Scott Allen Miller, and this is episode 43.
I know that I said that I was ready to move on. Too deep when I called, you had to go.
Thank you.
was My Place by Amy Ayers, brought to us by the PodSafe Music Network, which you can find online at music.podshow.com, where we get all of our music from, or just about all. Today is January 20th. We have a belated birthday that we have to do because we missed it. On January 17th, Benjamin Franklin would have turned 300, one of the most important of our founding fathers, born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, I do believe. Of course, now I'm not 100% sure on that, but 300 years, 1706 he was born. So that was a pretty big birthday. We don't want to miss that. And happy birthday today to Buzz Aldrin, the second man to walk on the moon. You could say that Moon was his middle name, but it was not. His middle name was actually started with an E. However, his mother's maiden name was Moon, so it was close. He is, actually, let's see. I'm not sure how old he is. I believe he's 76 today. But if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But happy birthday, Buzz, nonetheless. All right, today we're going to look at a news item. This is actually kind of what prompted me to record today. Normally I don't do podcasts one day right after the other, but I've been falling behind, so doing it whenever is better than doing it never, I suppose. All right, CNN had under Education with Student News. I don't know if that's an actual section or something they just did today. They have a study, college students lack literacy for complex tasks. However, the article goes on to discuss literacy with fundamental tasks, tasks such as understanding documents, balancing checkbooks, being able to do 15% tips at restaurants. Students are unable to, this is on average, the average American college student, okay, this is average of all college students, whether community colleges or four-year schools. And this study was done of students about to graduate, not students entering college. This is not about how incredibly low-functioning we're letting kids go to school with, but this is the incredible low level of functioning that we're going to let graduate from secondary education, or from higher education. They've already graduated from secondary education, apparently, and we have absolutely failed at the elementary level, we failed at the middle school level, we've failed at the high school level, and now we're seeing the colleges are not even managing to make up for what the elementary schools are not doing. And so the average college student is having problems interpreting tables about exercise and blood pressure, understanding arguments of newspaper editorials, although that you know, I don't know how much I can really discredit students for not understanding that, because quite often the newspaper editors don't understand the arguments in their own editorials. So that's a tough one. Students can't compare credit card offers with different interest rates. They don't understand annual fees. Unable to summarize results of surveys about parental involvement in schools. They did say that on average, so 51% or more of students were able to find their own location on a map. I can't believe that we were even in a position where giving a test like this has any meaning whatsoever, even at the high school level. But to give a test like this to college students, how is it possible that colleges are allowing a student in who can't calculate 15%? How? This is completely unreasonable. What possible value could these people have to the economy as workers that we can justify spending educational dollars on them in higher education? This is a complete waste of taxpayer money, of these students' time. These students need to be in the workforce being useful while they're still young and healthy, because they're just in college doing drugs. Apparently something has to account for this. And having no skills. These aren't people that I would want working at if I was running a McDonald's, and I have managed a Burger King. I don't want these people working at on my front line, because they can't do change, apparently, at all. If you can't balance a checkbook, it means you can't add and subtract. If you can't do that, I don't want you making change for people. So, I mean, we're not getting these people up to minimum wage jobs. I don't know what, you know, how much of our economy is being absolutely devastated by this. I mean, I don't know. I just had to rant about that for a little bit, because it's appalling. And I've been saying this for a long time, that our colleges are not demanding anything of students. Anybody who pays $80,000 can just get a degree. Now, okay, you can go online and for $200 you can just get a degree, and you know, obviously, but But these are, you know, middle states accredited universities. What's this accreditation that Middle States is doing? Okay, maybe most of these are not Middle States accredited. I don't know. I don't have enough details on this statistic, but this is from the Associated Press. I'm sure they're looking at actual colleges. They didn't list the actual ones that they were doing the study from. But what form of accreditation is happening here? How is this possible at all? The test that they used to test these college students is the same one that is used as the National Assessment of Adult Literacy, which is done by the government. So this is actually a federal, U.S. federal exam, and they normally show that 1 in 20 adults is not literate in English language in the English language here in the United States. So that's 5% of all adults that they test cannot speak English at a literate level. 5%. But what we're seeing here is that the college students are only marginally beyond that point. They must be able to speak okay, but you wonder if you can't do these simple tasks, how well can you speak? I don't know. I am totally at a loss. I have absolutely no really valuable input for that other than we need to stop lowering the bar on education. We cannot just allow anyone to get out of high school because we're destroying our country's economy. We have no value to bring to anybody because our students whose only value is working in factories do not need a long-term expensive education process because, you know, the average student that's having these issues is taking 5 years minimum to go through college. So we're dealing with someone who goes through 13 years of our elementary, middle, and high school system if they don't have preschool. So as much as 15 years and then 5 years of college afterwards. We're talking about a 20-year, very expensive education process just to encourage. I'm not saying just that these people then decide not to go on to highly lucrative careers or large boosts to the economy, but we've spent 20 years drilling into these students that they're only qualified to work in factories or to say, would you like fries with that? Because everyone around them is only qualified to do that. They're not being taught the skills, obviously, necessary to go on beyond that point. So the only thing that they can be being taught all that time is that they are simply inadequate and cannot perform. And, you know, as much as people may want to say, oh, by allowing the students to go on, we encourage them, everyone knows that that isn't actually the case. When you allow someone to get into a situation where they're clearly over their head and people are mocking them, they know. And nothing is more demoralizing than putting students who are not capable of performing up to minimum expectations into a situation where they must. And even worse yet is we're allowing these students into college. Many of them, I'm sure most of them, are riding on public funds and, you know, basically stealing from all the hardworking Americans. But many of these students are racking up unbelievable amounts of personal debt that they are, you know, they're too, obviously these are students who at 18 do not understand that they are adults with their own responsibilities. And when they take on debt, you know, this is maybe the first debt they've ever seen in their life. Says, oh, well, I'm going to college. And my high school told me if I didn't go to college, I would never have any money. So I have to go to college. This has been drilled into students all over America. Then these students go on to college thinking that college is some magic answer to wealth. And then they graduate from college racking up $80,000, $100,000, $200,000 worth of debt. This is not unreal numbers. 5 years at $33,000 a year, which is not uncommon, is $133,000 in college debt alone. You're not even beginning to look at how much debt is racked up from housing cost, food cost, books, fees. Entertainment during that time, even if it's very nominal, is still a lot of money. You easily hit $200,000 during a five-year college term. And you're not even beginning to factor in how much money is lost from those students not working during that time. If they had, you know, $15,000, $20,000 a year incomes during that time, that's an additional $100,000 maybe that's lost. So between the actual debt and the lost income, you're looking at not too much shy of a third of $1 million that these students may have lost during that time period. And then to have them come out of that college situation and not even be able to have basic functioning skills. I mean, do you really think a student who can't, you know, calculate a tip, can't balance their checkbook, can't read a map, is able to function in an interview? Do you think they're going to be able to get a job that actually pays more money than they were able to get 5 years before when they were getting out of high school? No. In fact, they're probably in a position where they're no longer willing to work jobs because they can't pay off their debt fast enough. They're in a situation that is basically impossible for them. So, I mean, it's just, we're not doing anyone a favor. This is really taking advantage of those students who are not mentally capable of making the decision not to go to college when it's inappropriate. And not that it's inappropriate for everyone. Obviously, I went to college. I felt it was appropriate for me. I'm not saying that lots of people don't get benefit out of it. But these people are not getting benefit out of it. They're not getting any college education at all, obviously. All they're doing is paying a lot of money for a piece of paper that they don't have the knowledge or the experience to back up. And then on the other side, those students who really do need to get something out of college, who have the opportunity to get value out of it, to be the economic backbone of our country, they're stuck in classes full of people who obviously can't read and write, can't do math. This is really, really difficult for those students. Obviously, once they get to higher levels, students in serious degree programs do leave the other students behind, and employers are aware of the fact that there are degree programs for people who are not performing and degree programs for people who are performing well, and they know enough to differentiate by that. But still, there's a lot of overlap where people are stuck in classes, and I know it's happened to me. I've taken a lot of classes, especially when I was at state colleges, where, you know, half the class is so incredibly far behind that it would be the equivalent of, you have to teach an entire high school education in math, for example. I've taken a calculus course where no one in the classroom was familiar with geometry, trigonometry, any of the pre-calc prereqs that you would expect going into a calculus class. And they also didn't have the ability to speak at a college level or to write at a college level. The overall education that they were bringing into that classroom was incredibly low, and the rest of the class had to sit and wait for them. And they weren't going to use this calculus later in life. Some of the class was, you know, there because they were appropriate for a college, a calculus college classroom, and this was math knowledge that they needed for future work or future classes. And then half the class was just there because they knew that someone would pass them one way or another, but ended up, you know, horribly holding up everyone else's education and really robbing from them a product that they buy, and that product is their education. That is something that students pay for, and it's something that they expect the colleges to deliver to them. That's why they pay so much money for that. So it's everyone gets hurt here. I'm not sure why so many Americans are so adamant about destroying our economy. It's the practicality of it isn't there for anyone. It hurts people on a personal level, and it destroys us on a collective level. So that's enough of my why we shouldn't lower the bar on college education or any education. And I'm going to have a quick interlude here. We are playing. The band is Berman, and the song is No One Understands.
Without me, maybe one day we'll see things the same. Feeling sorry I ever felt this way. Feeling sorry with no one else to blame. But me.
after all that ranting and raving about college education, in our last segment today, I'm going to talk about economic issues in the model railroading industry. I know this sounds boring, but there's an important economic model here that I think people need to understand, because the model railroading industry very clearly does not understand how this works. And recently I've been trying to open an online model railroading specialty hobby shop, and have run into a lot of dead ends with wholesalers and manufacturers who have no interest in selling to an online retailer. To an online exclusive retailer, I should say. They do allow brick and mortar stores to get their products and then sell it online as well, but there must be a brick and mortar in the front. So, why is it that, well, first of all, what's the issue? Why do I want to start an online model train retailer? Well, the first thing that happened was, in my local area, I decided to go looking for a model train store. I put in some work. Dominica and I did a whole bunch of searching, a lot of driving around. For about 3 days, we put in looking at different hobby shops in the Rochester area, yeah, pretty broad area, much bigger than the city, covering four counties, I think, we looked through. And what we came up with was there's one store, which is a pretty good distance from us and not in a convenient part of the Rochester area, way out on the east side. It takes about 45 minutes, maybe a little bit more, from down here in Geneseo to get up there. So this is a pretty long drive to get to a model train store. It's the only store that has any significant amount of modeling at all. There are a number of stores to sell trains, and what everyone's going to say is, well, I've seen tons of, you know, model train stores, but this is not the case. What you're seeing, at least in this area, is toy train stores. And let me explain the difference. Toy trains is a broader category, and it refers to, really, you know, model trains do, I guess, qualify as toy trains, but all of the trains that you give to children to play with, basically, whether they're big or small or wood or more or less resemble real trains, toy trains is this broad category of things that are not designed to be models. On the other hand, models are scale replicas of the original. And in model railroad, in actual railroad modeling, I should say, in railroad modeling, the goal of the hobby, and this is important, it's a hobby. This is not toy trains. You don't refer to as a hobby. When you're playing with Transformers or G.I. Joe, you don't refer to playing with those. It's a hobby. In the hobby of model railroading, what is done is hobbyists recreate scale replicas of, in some cases, prototypical locations. For example, they will model actual small towns with cars and people and buildings and trains and stations and trees and, in many cases, working lights, sometimes working cars. You know, some of these layouts will move from day to night. I mean, these things are complex, and the goal here is modeling, scale modeling. Everything is appropriate. It is not about a toy. It is about carefully reproducing something. And prototypical models will be of real real locations, real trains, real events, whatever. And then what's often referred to as I've lost the word. Well, anyway, there's another type of modeling that refers to simply modeling something that looks as though it's real, but is not necessarily based on an actual location. But it may be similar too. Like, you may model New England. That doesn't make it prototypical. That makes it kind of ad hoc. You may be basing it on a number of different locations that are similar, but it's not an actual town with, you know, in some cases people will actually duplicate businesses and homes to make it look that real, so it actually looks like you're in that location. But this is modeling. So modeling is this really, really intense hobby of recreation. And because it's model railroading, it's not like other modeling hobbies where there's a lot of people who model cars, a lot of people model airplanes, jets, fighter jets, military vehicles, ships, naval vessels. These are related hobbies, obviously, they're modeling, but the difference is they model a single item or a single vehicle. And it's, you know, that one vehicle is the scale, but that's all it is. In model railroading, the hobby is actually in modeling the entire landscape of an area. So the scale at which you model is completely different. It's a very, very involved thing where The models may be gigantic, hundreds of square feet perhaps. And in some cases, such as in Miniature Wunderland in Hamburg, Germany, they model almost 7,000 square feet. So these are unbelievable undertakings. Okay, so if you go to most stores in the area, what you find is toy train stores. Some of them may have model trains. They may have actual to scale trains. They may have some models, some that are pre-built, some you can put together yourself, whatever. But they only have a few, and the store is dedicated to toys. Well, this is a problem for a couple reasons. One, it teaches people that model trains are toys, which is incorrect. So they drive this point home. The second thing is that they make it an embarrassment for hobbyists to go there and shop because the things that they want are mixed in with toys, and people think that they're adults or teenagers or whatever who are spending outrageous amounts of money on a toy when they're actually spending money on a hobby. And thirdly, what happens is no store, whether it's a toy store or a model train store, can be large enough to carry everything in the world. When you make 90 to 99% of your store be based on toys, there's very, very little room left to have any space for models or to have any inventory for modeling gear, equipment, supplies, whatever. So if you go to a lot of the places in Rochester, what you end up with is, well, they carry three model houses, two train engines, a couple pieces of track. There's no one that you can ask questions of. They don't have any single person who is a hobbyist that you can say, oh, what magazine should I read? What book is good to help me out? What, you know, scales, what does this scale mean? Is N scale 1 to 160? What's Z scale? What size is that? Oh, people won't know. They won't even, in many cases, have heard of things. And so you aren't offering what I would call a boutique service, where you have highly knowledgeable personnel who are able to answer detailed questions. This is an important service of, like in a toy store, you expect the people working there to be able to tell you all about the toys. If you go to a computer store, you expect them to be able to tell you about the computers. Often that is not the case, but you expect it. When you go into a store dedicated to a single product, you expect the people who work there to be knowledgeable. But when it's only 1% of the store, or maybe even 10% of the store, quite often the people who work there are only marginally aware that they even carry the items. Okay, so you have a pretty good understanding of the problem with the toy store issue. Now, I guess the negative sides. Now, the lack of positive sides. What does a dedicated model train store bring to the table that other stores do not? Well, the really big one is, in a dedicated model train store, what you would normally have is a model, an actual realistic model that is designed to, in some cases, show off the skill of the owner or the manager or some of the staff of the store, maybe to show off some of the skill of some of the people who regularly go to the store. Because what happens when you have any kind of store like this, whether it's model trains or high-end stereo or whatever, what you in yarn stores, what you get is the people who are into that hobby. They go there, it's where the community focuses. So if you have one model train store in an area, what happens is all the people who are really into modeling, they'll go there, they'll get to know each other, they'll talk to each other, they'll bounce ideas off of each other, they might work on layouts together, maybe have them in the store. So a community springs up. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that people who are not used to model trains, for example, Dominica, who just recently didn't know the difference between toy and model trains and has never seen a real model train layout, nowhere in Rochester can she go and look at a real model train layout to say, wow, that's so cool, that's what I want to do. She has to imagine it. She has to get magazines and look at photographs of it to say that that looks like something that's really interesting. So there's this whole indoctrination of new potential hobbyists that needs to happen. And especially into this day and age when the hobby is dwindling, it's very, very difficult for people who have never seen the hobby to become interested in it because they have no idea it even exists. They can hypothesize that someone might make models of entire landscapes, but to think that there's actually an entire community out there that's doing it and products that are available designed to help you with it to make it something you can really do, might be something they never really imagined, even though they may be aware of toy trains. So there's a whole bunch of good that model train stores need to bring, and a whole bunch of bad that toy stores do bring. And so the combination is, where do you turn? If you know about model trains, but still have no access to these resources, what do? Well, you go online, and you try to shop online for these products, because there are none anywhere. Even if you have pretty good size model train stores, you still have the issue of not having a large supply of products and having to order them on a regular basis. And in areas like Rochester, where brick and mortars are very ineffective due to the incredibly large sprawl of the city, it's very difficult for people to justify driving in to place an order or calling in to place an order and then having to drive out and pick it up. And, you know, 4 or 5 days later, to still have to go through all this effort to manually go pick up products when in every other product that you could possibly want to get, you just look up a store online, go to Amazon.com, and place an order, and in 48 hours, the product you want is on your doorstep. Absolutely no effort to you. The prices beat everyone in the area. But you did have to wait 2 days. If you need something absolutely right away, you can go get it at Borders, for example, and pay slightly higher prices. But they had it in stock, and you have to pay for that convenience. The model train industry is currently, at least in the Rochester area, making it that there is no store for you to go to, there is no community, there's no brick-and-mortar benefits, and you can't buy online. So the only thing you can do is to go to a toy store, act embarrassed, and place an order, wait a long time, and hope that it's not too incredibly inconvenient when the product finally comes in, you have to go, then you can go pick it up. So this whole chain of events, this whole economy that's going on, is making it very, very difficult to buy model train gear. And I guess I should add that there are currently very, very few online retailers, and those that are they look like retailers from 1995. They look like pre-Amazon.com retailers. When Amazon came on the scene, everyone had to move up to close to Amazon standards. You had to have a fast interface. You had to be able to search for things. You had to have a good selection. You had to have things in stock. You had to deliver quickly, etc., etc. You needed to live up to user expectations. And these stores, every one that I've been to, completely does not. You can't search for the products you want in intelligent ways. Things are not categorized well. There's not very much information about them. There's no way for users to leave feedback about products they like or don't like. You wonder if anyone's ever purchased from this company before. Many times the websites look so old that you honestly question whether or not the company's still in business and if a web hoster is just keeping the website up for them. It's absolutely awful. There is one online retailer that has a new site coming up soon that looks really interesting and might move in the Amazon direction. But one coming online soon? This is 2006, people. I cannot believe that these resources were not there in the late 90s, if not the mid-90s. But it's model railroading. The late 90s would have been good enough. But to not have these kind of things today, if I was not already familiar with the hobby, if I went online, I would have no ability to find any products at all. I don't know how they expect people to become interested in this industry with how incredibly poorly it's set up. So this takes me back to the manufacturers and the wholesalers. Where do they come into play with this? Well, the manufacturers that I've talked to only sell through wholesalers. Obviously, there are exceptions to that, but the big players, at least, if you want to get their products, you cannot buy them from them directly, even as a reseller. You have to go through a wholesaler. There's four main wholesalers. So I contacted the wholesalers to see about getting products from them, and all of them say the same thing. They do not sell to online stores. They only sell to brick and mortars. So you must have a storefront. You must make this huge investment in time. And they have a lot of things, like your storefront cannot be in a basement. Your storefront must have regular hours. It can't be by appointment only. You have to have photographs of it. You have to show pictures of the neighboring stores so they know where you're at, et cetera, et cetera. So it's pretty decent requirements to open up a store. My interest was opening an online-only store. Obviously, no one is interested in having a model train store in the area. I think that there's a need for one online. There must be many areas. I live in a region that has a population of 3 million people, and I can't find a model train store. 3 million people! And it's not like we're isolated in the middle of nowhere. We're in a pretty large population area here in New York. And there's just nothing to be found. I can only imagine if you lived in West Virginia or Kansas or most of the country that there's just no way to get anything. So I don't know how this hobby is surviving at all at this point if I live in what should be one of the best areas. So the reason that they do this, as far as I know, if we look at another industry that makes a little bit more sense, which is the hi-fi audio industry. Companies like B&W, Bowers & Wilkinson, Paradigm, Totem, Rotel, Adcom. These are high-end companies. This is just a quick sampling. I'm not making any statement about quality there. These high-end companies, they do not sell online. Yeah, you can get them used through eBay. Yes, there are ways to get them online. But the reason that they don't sell online is because they require for you to sell their products that there be a brick-and-mortar that has a listening room so that people can go into hi-fi stores and listen to hi-fi and become addicted to it. Because hi-fi cannot be appreciated by people who cannot hear it. If you want to have a person become interested in hi-fi audio, they must go to a place where they can sit down and listen to it, because nobody is going to drop $10,000 or $20,000 for a decently basic system without having heard one. What everyone says who's never heard one, I mean, literally talk to a bunch of people who don't know hi-fi, yourself probably is the prime example, and say to yourself, is hi-fi really going to sound that much better than what I'm used to? Is it really going to sound better than Sony? Sony claims they make the best equipment in the world. Is it really going to sound better than Pioneer? Is it really going to sound better than Kenwood? And the answer is, yes, it's unreal how much better it's going to sound. But if you're not willing to go into a store and listen to it, you won't know that, so definitely get out there and listen to it. If you're in the Rochester area, go to Soundworks on Monroe Ave, out just past Pittsford Plaza, and ask whoever's there to sit down and teach you a little bit about high-end audio, and they will be more than happy to take the time to educate you so that you know what the hobby is about, that you know what products are out there, some major players in the industry, and that you can actually sit down and find out whether or not it's something you're interested in. If you don't do that, you will never become interested in hi-fi audio. I can tell you that right now. I can talk about it all you want, and you won't become actually interested. You might become slightly curious because people actually do get this into it, but you won't run out and spend any amount of money on it. You won't become interested in the hobby. You have to hear it. Model trains is not quite the same. You can become indoctrinated into the idea of model trains just by seeing photographs of them. It can be done. I'm not saying that having layouts in stores isn't a great idea. I think that would be a wonderful way to get people into the hobby. But what the model train manufacturers and wholesalers are doing is they're taking the approach that their hobby, like high-end audio, will die if they don't indoctrinate new hobbyists. This is true. This is completely true. I agree wholeheartedly. However, what they're failing to do is they're not creating dedicated modeling shops. Instead, they're selling to toy stores. This is where the error comes in. No, or very, very, very unlikely, are there any number of regular stereo shops that sell high-end audio. It's very unlikely that a toy store is selling high-end audio parts. No one bothers to sell these things unless they're willing to educate their own consumers, because you have to educate each and every person who's going to come into your store, almost 90%, something like that. So they have a completely different approach. But when you're dealing with model trains, most model train stores say, well, we need to sell toys because that's where the real margins are. They sell Lionel trains, they sell large gauge, you know, garden trains, they sell American Flyer, they sell K-Line, these things that are huge and look nothing like real world trains and are just great for little kids to put on tracks and run around the Christmas tree. That's where the money is. These are extremely expensive. It's like Barbie dolls. They're collectible. So it's just this fad or whatever of collecting these low-quality trains. So that's where their money is. So that's where they put it. And then, you know, sure, they might sell models because the owners quite often are modelers themselves, but they want to make money. They want to be able to pay the bills. So modeling has to take a backseat to toys because there's just very little money in modeling until you really, really make a name for yourself and have a very large community to support you. So what's happening is the wholesalers and the manufacturers are attempting to isolate their industry to just brick and mortars that will indoctrinate new modelers, but in fact are undermining that very effect by only selling to toy stores, so that every person who's curious about model trains, the moment someone gets a chance to see model trains in action, they accidentally see toy trains and think that those are models. If you go to, here in Rochester, you can go to, there's some places that sell crafts and some model trains. And yes, they have actual model train stuff there. They have real models, they have real trains, but very few of them. I mean, the world's smallest display, enough that literally it would fit into a coat closet. This is their entire stock of stuff. Most people find out about model trains in that area by going into Bycrafts and happening across this closet space that has some trains in it. And they glance at it. They don't look at it for any length of time. And they see it next to the model rockets for $2. And they see it next to the, you know, paper styrofoam airplane kits that you launch with a rubber band. And immediately, it is just a toy to them. It's something that they never think about again. And every so often, they go into the store and they see it again. And it just drills into their head that this is another toy. So the thing that the wholesalers are doing is they're actually creating the exact opposite effect of what the high-end audio industry does by limiting its sales. They are very, very carefully indoctrinating as many people as possible to have absolutely no concept of model railroading whatsoever. And so I'm really fearful for this entire industry. I really see it dying here in the United States. In Europe, it's still very popular. In fact, in Hamburg, the largest attraction in the entire city is a model railroad. So I think they're doing okay over there. But over here, people really are losing interest in it. And now that I actually make an attempt to become a part of a community and see what modelers are out there and see what stores are out there, I managed to find one store 45 minutes away where at least they have more than a coat closet worth of stuff in the scale that I work on. But still, the amount of stuff they have is incredibly small. Most of the store is a toy store. Nothing is well organized. It's definitely not what I would consider a high-end boutique. It really is a toy store that takes modeling a little bit more seriously. And I don't want to. The person who owns the store is a really, really wonderful guy and very, very nice. And I like shopping there, but I really wish I didn't have to order every product that I might want. I wish that things were in stock and that I could go and look at things firsthand, because I have the catalogs. I can flip through product catalogs and see pictures of them at home. I don't want to go to a store to flip through the same product catalog to see what I could order. It's just not it's not a fun thing to do. Stores need to be well lit. This one is not. It's definitely an uncomfortable environment. There's not enough room to really walk around. There's no layout there. There's a layout, but it's a toy layout, just trains running around in a big loop. It's not a serious model in any way. In fact, if you saw it, it would totally turn you off from modeling. So that's all we have. Me, as an active person who's put in way more effort than any person would ever normally do who is just considering becoming interested in this hobby. Yes, Will Wheaton, I said interested. I'm putting in an incredible amount of effort, and I can find nothing. So I want to know how they expect anyone to do anything with this hobby. It's just appalling that the business sense of these companies is so incredibly poor, and the interest in their customers, I mean, total disregard for giving their customers a way to buy their products. I mean, these are some people who need to pick up the Clue Train manifesto and learn how to read, because if they even knew how to read, they would realize that paper is gone the way of the dodo and that they need to learn to get on the internet and advertise their products. I mean, Atlas, the largest train maker in the United States, you cannot even do a decent search for a product on their website. They just have static HTML. The site is ugly. It is useless. If you're looking at reselling their products, they have absolutely no information about how to resell their products. In fact, if you email their service department and ask them how to resell their products, it took me 3 emails to get to a point where they would even realized that someone wanted to sell their products, and then told me I had to go somewhere else to a wholesaler. But they don't list what wholesalers they work with. They don't nothing. There is no resources for end users, no resources for resellers, and this is pretty much as good as it gets. It's all downhill from there. A lot of places have no website at all, almost no way to contact them. You can never figure out who is and isn't in business. You can't figure out who owns who. I mean, it's bad, that's my, I had to talk about it. It's been such a big thing. So a bunch of us have been talking about kind of kicking around the idea of starting a hobby store that specializes in model trains and carries no toys. I guess you could order them, but you must walk past an actual layout to be able to place an order. and a place where modelers would feel comfortable coming in and hanging out and buying stuff, and then we'd be able to sell online. That's where the real money is. But unfortunately, getting a storefront is not a really easy thing to do unless you're really planning on selling some stuff. And if you have to have certain hours to meet the requirements, that makes it that much more difficult. So it's pretty much just an idea we're kicking around. I'm sure it's a really bad idea. We're not really going to do it. But if the opportunity arises, don't be surprised if a hobby store suddenly springs up in the area that only handles serious model trains. So, okay, I'm going to leave it there. I know it's a lot. And I've gone way past the length that I wanted to do, and I was kind of on this this podcasting thing today because I listened to Radio Free Burrito episode 4 in its entirety today. And Will is just an awesome podcaster. I'm not really sure if I like his in-the-car stuff. Like, I used to like it when he used to use the phone, and he would do, like, these really, really short kind of in-the-car comments from time to time. That was cool. But now he uses his iRiver and does, like, these really long driving reports. And I don't know. I don't think it's up to the quality of his sitting in the studio stuff. I think that's a lot better, but I don't know. Maybe he'll get more used to it. I definitely cannot do very good podcasting when I'm driving in the car. But I can't do really good podcasting when I'm sitting in the studio either. So, all right, we are going to end the show today with a German song and its full name. I'm going to do my best to pronounce this. It's by the Elisabeth Lohener Quartet. And the song is Frag mich nicht, ob ich dich liebe, which means roughly, do not ask me if I love you. And this is, again, from the PodSafe Music Network, the Elisabeth Lohener Quartet.
suits weit. Frag mich nicht, ob ich dich liebe, frag mich nicht. Denn das, was heute Wahrheit ist, kann morgen